Otherwise, I'll...
Love Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Karen Rands, the Compassionate Capitalist, and we do a radio show most every Friday at noontime as part of a lunch and listen program where we bring together entrepreneurs, investors, and really other compassionate capitalists, people that want to learn more about how to be in the marketplace, bringing innovation to the market, creating jobs. And in this case, based on the topic we're talking about today, improving our lives through finding passion in what we do. So many people these days are making transitions between either because they have chosen to pursue a new opportunity on their own accord or because they have been right-sized or the company's gone out of business or all kinds of things are happening in the current economy. And it creates change can be really good. It can be scary, but it also can be really good to open up doors and open up new opportunities if you know, approach it in the right way. And so, of course, I'm the president of Launch Funding Network, launchfn.com. We're a consulting services group that works with entrepreneurs to help them take their business to the next level by engaging critical resources and mostly capital that they might need to grow their business. And one of the gentlemen that we're going to have on the show today is somebody that we've been doing some work with through our extended network and helping when some cases. It's Jim Dupree of DB&M. That's Drake Beam and Morin. That's DBM.com. He's going to be one of our guests today, and I'm affiliated with him through a network where oftentimes the executives are transitioning in trying to make a decision. Do they start a business? Do they stay in the same field? Do they buy a business? Do they go into a different field? And so he's going to share some great insights, and we might even have some folks that they've worked with call in at the end of the show. And then we're also going to have an author, Thomas Ellsworth, of The Rat, The Race, and The Cage, is going to talk about his insights into how high achievers can make career transitions and get to a place that they love what they do, whether that's a new job or in the case of an entrepreneur. So many of our listening audience are entrepreneurs. We always have to put that sort of a twist in there. So part of the topics that we're going to cover today is when, as a result of unemployment being as high as it is right now, we wanted to have this timely topic, and you may hear where the new jobs, the hot jobs are, the best fields to be in. But one thing you're also going to learn more about, and this is one of the things I believe that Tom covers in his book, is your personal career compass. What's the workplace personality? One of the ways that you identify and create satisfaction and passion is being able to work in a place that's consistent with your own goals and expectations. And, you know, if you are making a change to a new industry, how do you transfer those existing professional skills to get into a new industry? And then do you have what it takes to actually start a business or run a business? Because it's very different from being a W-2 type of employee to being an entrepreneur. So without further ado, I think I had said that we were going to start with, on my outreach on this, we're going to start with Tom's input. But right now, it looks like who we have online to talk with us is actually Jim Dupree. So we're going to get started with talking to Jim Dupree and understanding a little more about what DVM does, the unique service that they bring to the marketplace and how he got involved with them. So welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Karen. The so to answer the company question first, DVM is an outplacement firm that basically helps companies that need to reduce their workforce, coach their managers to do it right, to say the right things, and then to immediately work with the employees to get them in a helping mode, begin to help them think about what's ahead and at the same time work through the frustration, surprise, perhaps anger that comes with the fact that their world just got changed. Within that is a very elite group called the International Center for Executive Options, which is actually what I run in the Southeast. And that is a group that is specializes with the most senior executives, CEOs and C-suite executives and top-tier general managers. And that's a 6 to 12 month process that we work through with people that really says start by understanding the options you have. Consistently, the people I talk to can only name one out of three options that are really open to them. So the first part's kind of enlightenment, which is very, very welcome. And then choose the one or two that work for you and your family. What would give you the best balance of life, the most enjoyment of the role, and meet your economic targets, which you may choose to adjust from whatever they were at their peak. And then make that happen, basically, through engaging our network, the help of people like Karen, and then help the person succeed if that role happens to be in a new industry or a new geography or a new sector. Does that answer the question, Karen?
Yeah, sure. That's so, you know, basically you're taking, you know, people come to you. Which do you do more of, where a company that's going through a transition wants to take care of their executives, or do executives, can they come to you just, you know, they're a C-level person or a high-level person, and they can come directly to you because they themselves are trying to figure out what they want to do next?
That's a really good question. About a third of the people come to us on their own, and increasingly companies are sending valued executives to us that will retire or phase out over the course of the next 12 months, and they want to give them an opportunity to work on this choose phase, you know, during that sort of final period, because it's very logical to do that while one is still working, and the crisper picture one has of what they want to do next, the better it is for everyone.
Okay, sure. And so it's a is that buzzing sound coming from your?
It's I got to figure out. I'm in an office I borrowed, and I think it's. I don't know if there's a way to cut this off or not. I'm sorry.
Okay, I wasn't sure exactly. But sometimes you have phone lines that have a little funky thing going on with them. So now, how often do you see out of the folks that you're working with? Do you see where they make complete different? Let's sort of get a ratio of those that come to you that are currently employed and are looking for a better job someplace else. So they're looking at how to move up the ladder, you know, and which is, you know, there's probably a different process they go through on a self-assessment or what they want out of life versus that person that's, you know, may find themselves in, you know, they went into a field in college, they might find themselves an accountant or a CFO, but they really want to do something completely different. How many of those, what's the ratio of that kind of a change that you see coming through your program?
2 years ago, that would have been probably a third of the people. In today's economy, it's very, very difficult economy for someone to move up to a higher level, to an aspirational role, you know, from a CFO to a CEO, for example. So today that is a relatively small percentage.
For the climbing the corporate ladder, but for making whole career changes. Is that do you see an increase in that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry. More than I would say that 2/3 of our people are very, very open to what I would call a fundamental change. So that might be a whole new industry, that might be a whole new kind of a role, or that might be stepping out of corporate America into the entrepreneurial sector, or the private sector, or a portfolio career composed of some advisory work and some board work.
Okay, sure. I know on your website you had there's a, and again that website for DBM is dbm.com, very simple. But there was it was really interesting, some of the white papers, and maybe you even have some personal experiences you can share with folks. Whereas, you know, it's not always necessarily the thing that you think it's going to be on making a transition when you're trying to rediscover the passion in what you do, because so much of as we grow in our, or get old, you know, go through our lives, we get defined by what it is we do, right? So for somebody that might go from being, you had an example of a white paper where somebody went from a corporate CEO to creating a foundation. So they that's a completely, you know, probably taken a lot of the same management experience of being a CEO of a company, but now they're doing something that gives them a whole lot of personal fulfillment rather than just, you know, managing the day-to-day of a company. So how do you have folks that come through and then they have these revelations that this is really what they want to be doing, and they'll, and then you help them set that up?
Yeah, and let me give you a couple of real examples, but the bottom line would be about 40% of our clients tell us that we profoundly changed their life because they got on a path that they just wouldn't have thought of or wouldn't have thought was possible, and it's so much more rewarding for them individually. You know, they just had no idea that those kind of things were possible. And it's a lot, I think, of the same things Tom talks about in his book. So a couple of examples of that. One would be, and this one didn't end up happening for different reasons, but a guy all of his life had been getting on airplanes and flying from, you know, commuting to big jobs. He was running billion-dollar operations in the outsourcing business, not the outplacement business. And all of a sudden started hearing this discussion about, you know, there are a lot of local things that you could do. And in this case, found a local business that was generating about $500,000 income, net income to the owner. Had some property and things that made it virtually impossible for a competitor to emerge very easily. And you know, and would never have to get on an airplane. In fact, could go to work in cut-off shorts if he chose to. So that would be one example. Another example would be, in fact, Joe Joy, if he's going to talk later, former CEO, one of the world's best supply chain experts, and has had a traditional corporate career of kind of being all over the country. And as he would say, you know, you come home Friday night and you don't want to talk about work and you're kind of fried from travel, and Saturday you do the lawn work and Sunday afternoon you start packing. And has chosen to form his own business around a really good expertise that he has, and just discovered a whole new level of interaction with his family and, you know, a very, very different kind of a life once relieved from all those kind of tensions and anxieties. So there are a whole raft of those kind of examples. I would say at least half of our people end up doing something very different than they were doing before.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I really enjoyed about being a part of the DBM network is that even though you guys are worldwide, you know, you have 200 locations in 85 countries and, you know, a lot of name-dropper clients with your, you know, Fortune 500 clients and the Global 500 countries. Every time I come to a meeting, I'm invited to a meeting, or I plug in with your group, it's all so very personal, and everybody knows each other. You know, you never get the feeling like you're just part of some big corporate machine that you're churning out this, you know, cookie cutter approach to everything. It's all very personal, and I think that's probably the reason why so many of them, because I also noticed that your graduates, they continue to plug in and get benefit out of being associated, even if it's an extended association through, your organization. So, you know, hats off to the way you guys run things.
Well, thank you. We work hard at that, by the way, because and just a point on that, and I would invite you, you might invite Dennis, who's, I think, on the line, to make a comment about that. But part of what we basically talk about, this is an opportunity for some extraordinary introspection. People have gotten on whatever career path they're on. You know, they may have changed majors three or four times while they were in college, and now they're in a career path, and they've been in that path for 20 or 30 years. And they just don't think they have the ability to make that kind of change once they've invested that much time and built their network. And our belief is you got to build a new network anyway, and you might as well build it around the things you're passionate about, not necessarily stick with whatever you were doing before. So, but because of that approach, the people in our and the everyone in this program is in a space of being introspective. And that's caused them to be very open with each other, and they become best friends with each other, and we become good friends with them, and it really does become kind of a trusted, you know, very personal community. And we have some tough discussions in front of each other about things people are facing and issues they're dealing with, et cetera, and, you know, it's still a trusted community, so it's that's been a really nice thing to see happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So great. Well, it looks like we have Tom Ellsworth has joined us. Tom, is that you?
Yes, I am here, and I am very, very much apologetic. I was in a cab in New York. It was pouring today in New York. The helpful cab driver said this is the 66th day of rain this year, and so it's been a. I apologize for that.
No, that we I always. No problem. Not a problem at all. Understand. Appreciate you. I'm glad we were able to reach you and you were able to get to our phone to call in. So let me give my introduction for you. You're the author of The Rat, The Race, and The Cage. And, you know, and you have, you actually have been involved in this space for a long time in providing insights into, I guess you also work at a university where you're, it's the Biola University MBA program, and you're the CEO of GoTV Networks. And you're in your book, that you what you quoted as a saying, encouraging people to fire your job and hire a career. So welcome to the show. Very glad you could be here. I understand also that you and Jim go back many, many, many years. So it's that was a nice coincidence that Jim shared with me that this, I think we're going to have a great time having you guys talk together on the show. So welcome.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay, so let's get started by, you know, I want to find, of course, I want to know what the inspiration is behind the book, but tell me, what does it mean that you're the CEO of GoTV Networks?
GoTV Networks is a mid-stage company. It's about 4 years old. It's profitable, and it provides programming that people can see on mobile phones from T-Mobile or Verizon or Sprint, and we also build technology that helps that programming work. And so GoTV is based out in Los Angeles in the heart of the entertainment community, and that's what GoTV is out there doing. Then you asked about the inspiration for the book. Well, through my career, I've always been very interested in helping people optimize the choices they make of this job or that job. And it also very much came from my own desire to make better decisions or the right decisions. We all agonize over the next step in our career path. And along the way, I noticed that the type of work people did, like if you're a marketing person or a salesperson or producer of a radio show, was very, very different in terms of how they felt about it than maybe the industry they're in. You could love sales but really not like what you're selling or the particular industry that you're in. And then also people tended to gravitate to or away from certain types of companies. Some people would love to work at something very large like a Johnson & Johnson. Other people would find that the bureaucracy and the slow pace of decisions just rubs them the wrong way, and they prefer to work at mid-size or smaller companies, even though sometimes there may be, you know, risk to the company and, you know, and layoffs and things that happen with really small companies who, you know, could lose a big customer and then a lot of people lose their jobs, that would drive some people absolutely, you know, into stress-related disorders, whereas other people kind of like it because they find it exciting. So I found that the kind of job people took, the kind of industry they were in, and the kind of company they were in, people had definite feelings about this, including myself, but they never really considered all of those independently when thinking about their job. The most likely place a person ended up when leaving one company was at another company in pretty much the same industry in a similar position for a 15% raise. But if they really don't like that industry or there's things about it that were, you know, not in sync for them, that's actually the wrong decision to make. And so I broke it up together, and when the rat, the race, and the cage came together, when people said, you know, talking to me about my job in these three lenses, I really understand it better. You need to write this down so you can share it from people. And I kind of coined the phrase, the rat, the race, and the cage, with the rat is the type of work you do, the race is the industry you're in, and the cage is the type of company you work for. So I put it together in a book so that it would be a handy tool for people to manage their career with, along with the other resources they have in life, such as career mentors, friends that know them well, or even organizations such as Jim's.
Right, so it sounds like, and based on some of the things that Jim was sharing with us before, that people can be pursuing these careers, you know, they're, you know, in the race, they're maybe going from a different cage to a different cage, but they're in the race on that, and then they wake up, you know, in the twilight of their career realizing that they're really not being fulfilled by it, and, you know, wanting to make a change, or they're unhappy, they're not around their family enough, or, you know, whatever, and that can make, you know, cause them to go make a change. Now, I'm just curious because, you know, being a mentor and being, you know, on the academic side of helping people make career choices is a lot different than what you do as CEO of GoTV Network. Did you go through the same sort of process yourself, and that's how you came to be a part of an innovative company such as GoTV Network?
Yes. So I'll answer the first question, then I'll talk a little bit about the academic side, where I'm a mentor to MBA students. In my own life, I found myself gravitating toward earlier stage companies. I really didn't want anything to do with a card table in a garage eating macaroni and cheese, but I did really gravitate toward early stage companies that had a proven product and were trying to kind of build and grow. You know, smaller teams and things like that, it excited me. So I gravitated to that in terms of the type of cage that I found I really liked. And in terms of the race, I've always loved mobile. Mobile phones, wireless phones, and all the things they do for us today. You know, I've been kind of looking at that over 20 years, and I love what we can do with these phones. And so I just, I've always had a kind of a heart and affinity for that. So it absolutely has been part and parcel of my decisions in my own career. And it's also been part of how I interview people. As a matter of fact, even today, about a week ago, I had an interview that lasted only 45 minutes because I very quickly figured out that this individual, who'd had a great career in a large company in the mobile sector, who was looking for a vice president of engineering job, you know, GoTV would have been the wrong place. I mean, they really needed a larger company. And within 45 minutes, me just asking some simple questions, it suddenly became a 45-minute job counseling session rather than a two-hour interview, and the person sent me the nicest email back saying, I've never had an interview that actually helped me as much as this one did, even though we're not going to work together. And so that helps me hire people better and put the right kind of people in the right jobs. And so I apply it in my life, I apply it how I hire people, and to a lot of encouragement from friends that led me to actually write and publish the book.
Okay, so before we go to the academic thing, I want to just do a little follow-up question on that. So if folks go and buy your book, the people that can benefit from them are not just people that are themselves thinking that they might need a career change or in some kind of career transaction, but also those CEOs and those bosses that are trying to hire people that are going to be happy and satisfied with working within their environment as well.
Yeah, absolutely so. There's both sides to it. They're very, very applicable, and I share it with friends. You know, I always have a box of books in my trunk, and I'll invariably play golf or run into somebody, and I'll just say, here, you know, here's a copy of it. And they talk about that it becomes one of the tools that they use, along with their years of experience, in to interview better.
Okay, terrific. Are there worksheets in there? Because I actually haven't seen the book. So is there works? I know you talk about a personal career compass. Are there worksheets in there, or certain sort of checklists or tips, or how does somebody go about learning that and you know making it a part of their thought process when they're
absolutely. Yeah, there's worksheets in the appendix that starts with your current job and rate these various areas, and it takes you through a simple filter of how to rate, how you feel about the rat, the race, the cage, and you build a little checklist there, and then there's other parts of the appendix that says, okay, so now you've interviewed for this job, do a little vision testing, see how you feel about it, and you to compare the two. But yes, there's resources in there. So you might think of it as a book and also a consumable textbook.
Okay, great. So let's talk about that academic side of what you've done and kind of led you here.
So I've always had a heart for teaching and educating. As a manager, I've always been the mentor, coach, educator manager. That's been the thumbprint. And so when a friend of mine at Biola University said, we want to build a mentoring program into our MBA curriculum. And when someone enters the program, we want them to be interviewed by four or five executives. And then the executives will choose the students that they think are most clearly aligned with their personality and industry types. And you will be their active mentor for the duration of the MBA program. This was fairly unique because schools that offered mentorship programs usually only provided you a list of alumni that you could call, and the alumni were not committed to giving so many hours. They were just sort of like supporting the school by having a phone call now and then. Well, at Biola University, they asked us to be committed to 2 years to the student, and the student is calls you at least twice a month and takes and you help the student through this mentoring program hone like what elective courses they would take. There's 20% of their curriculum will be electives, and they're thinking about their future jobs or thinking about things, and so you have the opportunity to work with them. And I've also taken the rat in the race in the cage to that environment where people talk about, say, hey, you know, halfway through my MBA, I've got an opportunity for a job over here. And I say, great, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your current job. Let's talk about what you love. Let's talk about the classes you're loving right now. And let's see if we can figure out the rat a little bit. And then let's talk about this race based on the job you're looking at. Let's talk about the cage as well. And it really helps people hone it and have a more clear understanding of their own thumbprint. And I've had students I've mentored actually put off job change until the end, actually stay with a job that maybe wasn't perfectly optimal to them because they wanted to show tenure in the job and then make one change when they received their MBA and make it to what is truly a good choice at that time.
Okay. Yeah, so that sounds good. That sounds like a great value that you bring in within that school. Anybody that wants to get more information, Tom has a blog that he talks about these topics and all his insight in these different areas, and also his information on buying his book, and that's at ratracecage.com, ratracecage.com. You can go there and subscribe to his blog and get more information. And also get the book, and you can also get it at Amazon, which is a link on the Blog Talk Radio link to that to get it on Amazon. So let's open it up and let you and Jim start interacting. Since you guys, let's if you don't mind sharing, how do you, you guys have known each other since you were kids or something? Is that right?
Since Tom was a kid.
Okay.
Our first business relationship was I waxed Jim's car when I was 14.
Oh, wow.
No, our dads had a rich career. Not our dads. My father and Jim had a rich career together at IBM, and I've always had this natural curiosity, and I tended to kind of, you know, gravitate and engage as a teenager with many of my parents' friends, and so Jim has always been around, and he was something of an uncle to me as I grew up.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Small world. Wow. You know, and didn't even know that. It was just meant to be for you guys to be on the show together. So, here, I'm going to toss out some questions, and we're going to let you guys sort of chime in with your different thoughts on this. So many people, you know, might be tempted to leave their current job or start an entirely different career. You know, an IT tech might want to become a professional dog trainer, or a teacher who wants to open up her own business, or an executive that wants to start a foundation or go acquire a company or whatever, start a consulting business. When people decide to leave their job or start a totally new one, how can they be sure they're making the right decision?
You want to start with that, Tom, or you want me to?
Why don't you start?
Karen, my answer to that would be I have found every single person that we've had in the program that has changed their compass setting has been able to make that choice work for them. You know, it's not always as quick. But so if someone, I think the answer is kind of at the heart of his book and at the heart of what we do with a lot of resources is really understand what you want to do. And what I found is it's equally important to have a conviction about what you don't want to do as it is to have a conviction about what you do want to do. And if that conviction is strong and is pulling you in a certain direction, then have confidence you can make it happen. And you know, unless there's some resource issue or some other thing, I mean, that'd be a family decision. But my advice would be go for it. You can do it if you go for it.
Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I would add the following to it. If you stay in a position, right, we all have to make a living for our family, and Jim correctly points out that there are things that will absolutely be family decisions. But if you stay in a certain position and there's something about it you inherently don't like, my hypothesis, which has been validated with people I meet, is that ultimately their lack of passion on some level comes through, and ultimately, you know, it affects performance. Maybe not to the point that they would ever be managed out or terminated, but certainly, you know, they're not going to be, you know, a level one performer, even though they might have those abilities. And I encourage people, I say, how long can you stay in something that is just not gelling for you? Because some point, sometime, you know, it's going to come out in your performance. And worse, it probably comes out in just the quality of life you experience, you know, with your family. You spend 8 hours a day not really enjoying what you do. It's like you're giving up your life force. And so I agree with Jim wholeheartedly. I encourage people as well, say, make a plan as if you're being laid off is a phrase I use with people.
So that's the backup plan.
Yeah, just pick a date on the calendar, 6 months, 4 months, make a plan as if you're being laid off. If I was being laid off on that date and I had to follow something new or follow my heart, what would I do? And you'd be surprised when you get a little encouragement, you get a little, you get people that help you make the plan, help you kind of rise above the clutter of your own mind. It's incredibly fulfilling. And it may include, you know, lifestyle changes as a family, of, you know, stepping back from a lease on a Cadillac Escalade, and maybe that's a good thing.
Right. Yeah, and Karen,
yeah,
Karen, to go back and add to that comment, even in the same company, I guess I was led to this work because throughout my career I had a basic rule. If I wasn't going to enjoy the position, no title or no amount of money could get me to accept it because I knew the worst case would be I would enjoy it, and much more likely because I obviously enjoyed it, I would prosper, you know, in the role as a result.
Sure, right. And I can reflect on that, too, in the time that I was at IBM and, you know, when I was unhappy. I mean, I came very close to being one of those, you know, unemployed people sometimes just because of my attitude and it was because I was unhappy in that particular job. But then I, you know, I kind of do a gut check. And the nice thing about a big company like IBM is that there were other opportunities within the company. So I do an attitude check. So I would be in good graces with my boss, and my boss would let me have a shot at an opportunity that I really wanted. You know, maybe it was lateral or whatever, but it was just doing something different. And so, you know, that's – and then until ultimately I left to go pursue what was my real passion, which is helping entrepreneurs be successful. So, so I can see that being – I like that idea of sort of having a backup plan of thinking, because even when we talk to entrepreneurs about – you know, starting a business, one of the things that we encourage them to do is to, you know, do all of that while they still have a job and they still have payments coming in, you know, be working on that business plan and you've got the money to pay people to do certain things so that when you're ready to go or be saving up your money because you're going to buy into another business or you're going to be doing something, but do all your research and figuring out what it is that you want to do before you actually leave the job.
Yeah, and in our center, so just to use that example, the people that are engaged before they leave their current position, and kind of back to Tom's point about having a plan, the first question is, do you really want to be an entrepreneur? Do you have the right stuff? Do you have the right passion? Are you doing it for the right reasons? Do you fully understand the financial investment and consequences? Is your family behind this decision? You know, you've been through all those, I know, Karen. And Tom, and Tom's a very accomplished entrepreneur. But so if you decide that's what you want to do, then the journey of studying businesses, developing a business plan, really focusing on what you want is quite a journey, and it's something that's very easy for someone to do while they're still working.
Sure. Actually, you hit on it perfectly because you know, not everyone can be an entrepreneur, and sometimes it's, you know, we saw it a lot and I see this with any big company when they lay off folks. You know, you'll have folks that become entrepreneurs because they feel like it's their only option. They can't get a job, so they become a consultant, or they go and they do something like that because they can't, you know, the economy is such. But they really don't have that passion to work all those extra hours to do the things that they need to do in order to be successful because it's it becomes very frustrating. So, you know, is there a way that in both of you in the mentoring that you've done, Tom, and the programs and in the work that you do, Jim, is there a way that somebody can figure out, how do they figure out if they're wired to be the entrepreneur that's willing to, that has to be flexible, that, you know, has to, you know, persevere through tough times, you know, be able to take some risk? How do you know whether you have that inside you?
From our point of view, we take people through a pretty extensive battery of assessments that help illuminate a lot of those things. We have a panel of peers, including entrepreneurs, that have a very good eye for what I call the right stuff, and we sit down at an extensive discussion and kind of go through. You know, what are the reasons you're considering it and sort of measure those against what we know are good reasons and what we know are not so good. And then the same thing with all of the, these are all the practical aspects. And, you know, are you really ready for the income variability and the other factors that go with that? And then keep measuring that because first step is, you know, you think it's right and you dive into it. Then you start looking at some business plans that are a lot more casual than you're used to in the corporate world, and maybe you go down a path of making an offer and have the deal go south for some you know, predictable but or one of the many reasons that happens, and that sort of is another test of the resolve.
Sure.
When people ask me, they say they're usually only thinking about the financial reward. Maybe I should just start my own business, right? It's usually related to financial, you know, considerations because they think that it's automatic. So the first thing I do is my battery of text is not as sophisticated as Jim's because I don't, you know, typically this is one-on-one, but I just ask them some simple questions. And I said, have you been ever asked to lead like a groundbreaking special project in the job you have right now? Have you ever done that? No. Okay. Have you ever taken something from completely scratch that maybe was a little bit different than the regular things that were going on at your business or your department? No. Okay. Tell me about some time in your life where you actually started and you did something on your own, whether it was creating a study group, creating a club at school, or anything like that. And usually you get another nope. And I'm like, and I said, great, you're a wonderful team member, but I don't see anything in your DNA to date. And we can keep talking if you want, but I don't see anything in your DNA to date that says that you've been wired to just take one of those big steps off a cliff and take some savings and get an office space and give something like this a shot. Maybe it's a good time for you to partner, you know, with somebody in that. If you really think that the small cage and the entrepreneurial environment is for you, but it doesn't look like you're necessarily an originator. And it usually doesn't take very long. But most of the time people are thinking starting their own business, the ones I've talked to, it's usually been about financial reward or being your own boss. And all of that is, those are, don't even show up on my list of benefits is why I've done things.
Okay, great. That's good insight, and I think that's so very true. I know for myself, I was always looking for the one-off thing and creating, you know, proposals for me to work on a certain project and, you know, within the corporate structure of IBM. I mean, and spearheading different endeavors that were, you know, new businesses or whatever like that, and you know, not really thinking at the time that I was trying to be an entrepreneur within a corporate environment, but I guess that's really what I was doing, and so now I am. So very good. Okay, so people often talk about job satisfaction almost as a right or an entitlement. During economically unsettling times, though, you know, many of them are too scared to leave their job. So what would you say to the person who has a steady paycheck but is unhappy in their current job situation? I know we kind of talked about that six-month plan. Is that the best thing for them to do, or is there a different sort of reflection that they might need to go through?
Tom, I always leave with that one.
Okay, I always start with the plan. You know, it's like, and then I usually back into it. I try to find out where the point of dissatisfaction is. And the way the rat and race in the cage model works is I ask people to kind of give me all the adjectives they could think of about the job they do. And let's say they're in product marketing, and they're not on the advertising or PR, but product marketing, features, you know, literature, sales support, things like that. I say, give me a bunch of adjectives. And then we agree on, okay, wow, you know, on a 1 to 10 scale, that's about a 7. And then I say, okay, now tell me about your industry, and give me a bunch of adjectives. And when you hear slow, plodding, static, I said, okay, that sounds like it's about a 3. And then you go on to the kind of company, and that really quickly points out, and I say, look, your career compass, you need to be pointing away from the industry you're in. I encourage people to build a plan, but to know what direction it is that plan is going to take usually is very, very evident when they just kind of go through the little rat race in the cage model, because it's very clear whether it's what they're doing or the industry they're in or the company. As a matter of fact, Jim, you actually shared with me the anecdote about the individual that was in heating and air conditioning.
Right. So one of our now alumni was the CEO of a $150 million heating and HVAC distribution company. And family owned, and had done a remarkable job of turning it around. And one day they said, you know, we don't need you anymore. They basically wanted their baby back. And so he really thought that had the potential for a roll up. and said, I'm going to go try to buy that company. And he actually got Hugh McColl, in this case, to agree to provide the financial backing. Made an offer, and they just said no. And he said, I don't really think it's all about the price. I think for whatever reason, they just don't want me running the company their dad founded, basically. And I'm really discouraged about that. And so I looked him in the eye and said, now I got to ask you one of those potentially aha questions. I said, but what is it that you love about the HVAC industry? Because I haven't met a lot of people in my life that, would put that high on their list.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this long pause, and he says, absolutely nothing. I hate every single thing about that industry. Well, then why would you want to spend the next 10 years of your life trying to laboriously assemble a roll-up in an industry you hate?
Bingo.
And what was his answer?
You're absolutely right. So then we focused on, in his case, his passion was homeland security and sports. He happens to be a very active in endurance bicycling and some other sports. And a lot of those companies are built by people that have a passion for the sport but aren't necessarily good businessmen. And there's a lot of opportunity to take a truly top-tier executive and go run one of those companies. So that's what he's doing.
So good. That's a great story. And speaking of which, if there are any folks that have benefited from either Tom's counseling or been a part of DBM, I know we were hoping to have some folks call in. We have a few folks on the switchboard, but they don't have their little hand raised saying they want to go live. So if you would like to make a comment about how you made a transition from where you were to where you are and regain passion, then please, we got one here. I'm going to push the button to raise your hand, and then I'll know that you want to be brought live. So I'm going to bring on what you can do. I'm going to say your last four numbers of your extension so you know it's you. And then you're going to say your name and, introduce yourself and then tell your story. So extension 1911, you're live on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, Karen. My name is Joe Joy. And
oh, hi.
I'm a recent DBM client and alumni.
Okay, great. Yeah, Jim had mentioned you a little bit earlier in the show. So tell us your story.
I apologize for being late. I clicked on the wrong button and just got a nice education on organic fertilizers from an old show. I'm so sorry.
That was last week's call. Yeah. So good. Well, good. Well, we're glad you're here now. So tell us what was your career before, and what are you doing now, and how did you find your passion?
I've been in OEM technology firms such as NCR and AT&T for the first half of my career, and then the second half has been with tier one outsource providers like Selectron and Celestica. And I also started my own firm and eventually led a small public company in that space as well.
Okay, so you're an expert in the field, I guess, in supply chain management?
Supply chain management, outsourcing, Toyota production systems, lean manufacturing, things like that, mostly in the technology world.
So the last one where you were running your own company, but you...
The last one was with a tier one provider, and we were growing a line of business, and they collapsed it into the mainstream company. And we were being very successful in our group, and I was absolutely shocked and amazed to be let go. And 3 days later, I got a call from a Jim Dupree, and I was incredibly rude and abusive to him. I assumed he wanted to write my resume and give me lists of headhunters and things like that, and that kind of standard coaching and counseling. And he said, look, just have dinner with me. We're different. And I promise you, this could be the most important time of your life and, just a life-changing experience. Because this is an extraordinary opportunity you have in front of you. And so instantly he caused me to not look at this as a disaster, but as an opportunity, this opportunity to make a transition.
Well, great.
The so DBM
– What are you doing now? So where did you transition to and –
I have started a supply chain consulting firm.
Okay.
And I spent the first 6 months in a traditional job search, and I went through the DBM process, which I think the two key deliverables from that process are, one, perspective. Take a step back and see where you fit in terms of your career, you personally. And then two, I think, is discernment. And as Jim said, the first 6 months for me was deciding what I did not want to do, is throwing things out. And what I love about the process is you say, look, I want to buy a franchise. They put you with a franchise expert. I want to go to not-for-profit, or I want to go get board seats, or whatever you want to do. They've got the network to put you together with practitioners. And then you can make a decision as to, you know, is that the path you want to go down? The second half, though, is when I decided to launch this supply chain consulting firm, because it was just far more, I never thought of myself as a consultant, but it was just far more aligned with my personal values and what I wanted to accomplish. And he really helped me change the way I thought about working and retiring. Up until DBM, I had the idea that you work, then you stopped and went to Florida and kind of waited to die or spent the money you had saved.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole passion notion is you never really stop working, if you will, right? You never stop being productive. There may come a time when you stop working for compensation. And that's been the fundamental shift in my perspective.
Yeah, I can't even imagine myself ever actually just sitting on a porch in a rocking chair, you know. Okay, well, good. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. What's the name of your company, and you know, how would people reach you if they have a need for a supply chain management consultant?
We are Impreza Partners at ImprezaPartners.com.
Okay, and that's spelled I-M...
EM. It's EMPRESA, which is Spanish for enterprise.
Okay. So good. So,
hey, Karen, two things if I could add to that.
Yeah,
one is Joe's offering is very unique because it basically takes all of the things that end up affecting the landed cost. So variables on shipping time, on fuel costs, on political instability, and puts it into an ongoing dynamic model instead of a last year's study that sort of is getting dusty before it's ever put on paper. And if somebody's either going to run a promotion and needs to double supply or has some other kind of disruption in the world, it's the real-time ability to immediately figure out the best way to adapt. So it's a very extensive modeling capability that no one has ever put together before, plus a whole lot of expertise. The other thing is, Joe, I think you ought to share for a minute. I asked the other day why you said it was such a great day, and why don't you just quickly share that?
Okay, so my answer used to be, when someone asked me how's it going, my answer used to be driven exclusively by the number of interviews I was finding or the number of job opportunities I had in the works. In other words, it was defined by the income-producing activity. And now my answer is, my life is wonderful. Over this past year, I have spent more time in candid, intimate conversation and time with my wife than we probably had in the last several years, more time with my children. My personal peace and my faith has grown and developed. I've done more reading that's expanded me as a human being. Of my 100 best business and social relationships, I believe at least a third of them have been made over the last 12 months. I've met people and learned things that just would not have been available to me had I not gone through this whole process. So now when someone asks me, how's it going? My life is wonderful.
Yeah,
I have this income thing that still needs a lot of work, you know, in growing this young business. But it's not determining my joy, and it's not driving my peace anymore. And I never, until I got this distant from my last two jobs, I didn't realize how much anxiety was in my work, where my weekends were not about rest or personal development or investing in anything. My weekends were about drowning out the noise, frequently with alcohol, or just shutting the world out. And then by Sunday night, the knot was back in my stomach because here we go. And I don't think you understand how much anxiety and frustration is in your life as an undercurrent until you get very, very, very distant from it. And you really start to accept the fact that there's an alternative and it's under your control.
That was terrific. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, so Karen, when you went back, that question you asked about, you know, if people really think they're misaligned, should they sort of take the risk? And back to some of the things Thomas said, I mean, it's not just take the risk to get a different job. It's an opportunity to fundamentally change your life. And when I say people, you know, say that's really one of the key outcomes of what we do, that's obviously a great testimonial.
So Karen, if I could just tell you one more thing, this getting in touch with a passion. One of my passions is about creating an opportunity for people. And it's electronics. I just spent the last 12 years of my life sending jobs to China. When in fact, that if companies spent more time on lean and designing intelligent service-oriented supply chains, you can actually be more competitive and even operate inside high-cost markets like the United States and Central Europe. And that's the emotional payoff for me.
Good. Well, you said something, too, that also kind of leads into a final question I have for Tom before we start to wrap up, and that's, Tom, you created both the secular and the spiritual version of the rat, the race, and the cage. And, you know, Joe commented about sort of, how he's been able to explore a whole other, you know, development for himself that he wasn't able to do when he was in his rat race of the job. So explain why you decided to have two different versions of your book.
Well, there was a pretty strong there's actually not two different versions of the book when you think about the core message. The basic message of it as a whole is identical in both books. But there were some people in the basically faith-based community, primarily Christians, Protestant, Catholic, who indicated, they said, you know, in a time such as this, man, wouldn't it be nice to have like a devotional companion for this? So that people of faith, you know, in terms of looking at, you know, what God says biblically about work, and as well as very much what Joe was just talking about spiritual balance. So what I did was, being part of that community, I sat down and wrote devotionals at the end of each chapter. And so the two books are identical, except one has, in terms of the core messaging for anybody who might use it to help them interview better or plan their own career. But there is a Christian version that has devotionals at the end of each chapter for individual use, or to maybe make a study group or a support group through your church or just people you know.
Okay, terrific. Are both those versions available on your website?
Yeah, both of them available through Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com and information on the website.
Okay, great. That sounds like it would be worthwhile. So so as we get ready to wrap up here, well, let's give everybody's, again, this is the Compassionate Capitalism, Compassionate Capitalist Show, Karen Rand. I've been talking with Thomas Ellsworth, the author of Rat, the Race, and the Cage. That website is ratracecage.com. That's his blog, and you can get information about lots of information about, as you're going through this process yourself. If you were able to hear Joe's story, if you want to discover passion in what you do and discover what your real, what you feel like your purpose in life might be, that you may not be feeling, you may feel an emptiness. I hear people all the time tell me that they're searching for something because they're not really feeling fulfilled. They're just kind of going through the motions. So finding a balance between what you're doing from a career standpoint, your personal family and friends, and then on the spiritual side, you know, I think the information offered here today, as well as the obviously what we've just talked about with the book, you can get that. But then also Jim Dupree is here with us from DBM. And, you know, the DBM.com website is a site to go to get broad information about all the different programs. But Jim, if somebody's here local in the Southeast, how do they get in touch with the local office here to be able to reach out to you guys?
My email is jdupree at dbm.com, so dupree, and my phone number is 770-290-3936.
Okay, terrific. Any, I'll let you guys make some final comments as we begin to wrap up the show here. Joe, do you want to make any final comments?
Nothing except that what Jim promised me at that dinner came true. This has been a life-changing year for me, and I just feel so blessed that my last employer let me go, and that I was sent to DBM, and that their focus was on discernment and on perspective rather than resume writing and interviewing.
Terrific. So you want to follow that, Jim, with your final comments?
Sure, and thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk about this. We just, you know, everybody needs to find their compass setting, and we think that's a 10-year setting, not a next job setting. And it may be the next job gets you all the way there or puts you on that course. But the peace, the conviction, and the overall happiness that comes with really understanding that and having your own plan instead of adapting to whatever the market throws at you or is just so much better for people that we enjoy. And the other part is our job's about helping people. This is for our clients, not for us. And that's been a wonderful thing for me. I'm the accidental tourist. I got into this by accident, more or less, by volunteering for 18 months to be one of the volunteer advisors we have, and it's been wonderful.
Okay, sure. Great. Thank you. And then Tom, go ahead.
I agree with Jim. Take a long view, but build a plan today. And as I tell people, fire your job and hire a more satisfying career. It's in control. It's in front of you. Start today.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for being a part of it and for all of our listening audience. This will be posted as well on my blog, entrepreneurblogspace.com, and I'll, add some additional content in there that came from as a result of the show and what we've learned here. And any information you want to get about what we do over at LaunchFN, please go to launchfn.com. Next week on our show, we'll be talking about entrepreneur programs, and we'll have another author, and we'll be talking about entrepreneur programs in universities and how people are coming out of the university system, learning how to be entrepreneurs, and going down that path. I guess they know what their passion is and want to be an entrepreneur from the get-go. And so we'll be talking about that next week. And thank you very much for listening in. Have a great Friday. Onward and upward.